six or seven head of secret police, whom he later arrested.
By the early 1930s, with the peasantry under control, Stalin moves on to terrorize other sectors of society.
The rationality was minimal, so that, you know, Stalin would identify certain kinds of enemies and indicate, sometimes no more than indicate, to his NKVD chiefs that they may be enemies and they need to be taken care of.
Stalin is by nature paranoid, a quality approved by the Bolsheviks as vigilance. Stalin's world is a world in which everyone has cause to be fearful.
What tends to happen is, sure, these folks, and their families, by the way, are repressed, meaning arrested, tortured, killed, sent to the gulag, but also the neighbors, the people they know, and the people those people know. And so the terror takes on a kind of tumbling weed quality, moving through vast swaths of Soviet society in a way that no one is immune.
Invoking false claims that people are plotting against him, Stalin moves against those he labels terrorists.
Stalin was the founder in the 20th century of the war on terror. And it was very easy to exploit the terrorism. So he used this terror, imposing his own terror, and he and his secret police decided who is the terrorist.
Newly declassified documents reveal Stalin's willingness to commit any crime in service of what he calls socialism in one country.
Even after the Bolshevik Revolution, there was a widespread expectation among Bolshevik leaders that the success in seizing power in Russia was the beginning of a wider European and then global revolution. Stalin, however, argued, and argued successfully, that revolution may be deferred, but in the meantime, one should construct socialism in one country, which really was totalitarianism in one country.
1929. Stalin and his conspiratorial cadre of leaders embark on a course to reconstruct society itself from top to bottom.
He thoroughly traumatized the whole of society. And as a result of that, he became the supreme leader, resting his power not just on the party, but on the party and the police. And he terrorized the party into accepting his supreme leadership.
He was very adroit at intimidation, and he developed over a long period of time an inner circle of completely slavish, servile individuals who would do almost anything for him.
To bolster his power, he deftly weaves a cult of personality around himself.
Stalin's cult of personality was a byproduct of the totalitarian system. It controlled people's expression, it controlled what people read, it created a false sense of unanimity, and all of it was focused on the special role of the great leader, the leader who was infallible, the leader who loved the people, the leader who had to punish evildoers.
Once you get rid of God, once you get rid of tradition, once you get rid of Santa Claus, who's there? Something has got to fill the void. This man represents the state. This man represents power. This man represents God. That's what the cult of personality is about.
Everyone, from the earliest age, is taught what he may or may not say.
Can you imagine a person who barely starts talking and walking already knows that there is the greatest leader in the world? And this person should be very happy and feel lucky that he lives in the country led by this greatest leader, the father of all times, and whatever the titles we have.
Stalin skillfully utilizes this cult of personality to idealize and protect himself.
Stalin controlled all of the media images of himself, you know, all the photographs of himself, all the outtakes. You know, he made sure that he, you know, had them and looked at them.
Utilizing the state-controlled media, he reintroduces some of the trappings of Tsarist Russia, with himself as the Bolshevik pseudo-czar. The people are made his adoring subjects.
The striking thing is that many Russians think of him with favor, and in a traditional sort of a sense, as perhaps innocent of the crimes on the grounds that he was the great leader and perhaps he wasn't fully informed what was being done.
To crush dissent, to introduce insecurity and distrust within society, the government encourages private citizens to become informants.
You could never be certain when you were anywhere, in a restaurant, making love to your mistress, playing with your children. You never knew who could be an informant. You never knew. And in any room of 10 people, there was always going to be at least one.
The manipulation of fear, the ruthless utilization of the secret police, and the cult of personality coalesce into a political system known as Stalinism, an echo of Russia's cruel past.
We talk about the political system which was known as the Stalinism. It was not unique. It was well known in periods of Russian history like the time of Ivan the Terrible or even Peter the Great, where they eliminated about half of the Russian population, each of them.
Ideologically driven, pragmatic, and ambitious, Stalin believes that history is on the side of communism.
So what we have in Stalin is a mixture of identities. He's someone who wants recognition as one of the great men of the world, but he's also an opportunist and a gambler with the security of his own country.
With his policies driving everything, Stalin is now referred to as Borscht, or the boss.
The boss, the owner of the factory. It is like the owner of the country.
Stalin has transformed himself into an unassailable authority, controlling everything in his iron grip. As he continues to remold society, no sector of the population, no individual, is safe. His greatest challenge yet is rising in the West. A world war is coming. Having used his tyrannical power to crush dissent and dominate the USSR, Stalin is getting ready to lead the Soviet Empire into war. To accomplish the communist dream of world domination. But first, to transform his nation into a monolithic military machine, he resorts to phony trials, liquidations, and mass deportations from which no one is exempt. Not even members of the party itself. Two million citizens are deported to gulags in Siberia and Kazakhstan, where they are forced to perform slave labor.
Essentially, you need to understand that gulag from the very beginning was an economic